Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Sunday night. Joining me from Naples, Florida is our front office insider, Bobby Marks. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. Can you believe what was more shocking today? Jose Alvarado of the New Orleans Pelicans putting up 38 points on the Nuggets, who, by the way, the Nuggets are the 38 points from... was not a good weekend for the Nuggets, but 38 points from Jose Alvarado, the most points ever scored by an undrafted player in the NBA.
I commented right when it was going on. I said, you might as well guarantee the rest of that contract for this year. Can you believe too that they have him under contract? And I understand at the time, the guy wasn't making any money. He was on a two-way, but this year's partial, next year's non-guaranteed. It's a team option, and it's one of these baseball type contracts that we see out there. Right. Like the pitcher will be like 34 when he hits free agency and it'll be able to cash in here. But I think I'm more shocked that Willie Green took him out at 38, although he had two attempts to get to 40, that he took him out of the game there.
So I talked to Andrew Lopez, who covers the Pelicans. He was at the game and he was chasing 40 for several possessions. Yeah. He pointed out Zion's never scored 40 in a game. But apparently he's told me that the Pelicans, the last few possessions, they were moving screens like crazy. They were trying like everything in their playbook to try to get him to that 40th point. He couldn't.
There was multiple clear outs.
1-4 flat for Jose Alvarado. He didn't run 1-4 flat when he was in high school, I'm sure.
No.
So AD scores 55 in DC tonight. The Lakers win again. He was 55 and 17. Bobby, I have his stats for the last 10 games. He's averaging 35 points, 16 rebounds, shooting 65%. Part of the reason why he's on this hot streak is he has knocked off shooting threes and has been getting to the line, attacking, super aggressive. Averaging 10 free throws a game in those 10 games, and he's shooting 88% at the line. By the way, when he does shoot the three, which he's only averaging like 1.5 a game, he's shooting like 45% on those. But he's kind of morphed over his game. But more than anything, like, he's just being viciously aggressive. And I've talked to some folks around the team. I've talked to some folks around AD. His back was bothering him early in the season, and it's better now. Only he knows, but he missed a game last week because of a calf injury. So, he's healthy, but only he knows why all of a sudden he's being just vicious, like the Anthony Davis, peak Anthony Davis. And it's made a humongous difference. The Lakers started 2-10. They win in D.C. tonight. Now, Bradley Beal only played 3 minutes, had a hamstring injury. But, good luck beating any team when a guy scores 55. LeBron had a good night too, and they're 10-12. They started 2-10. They've gone 8-2 since, Bobby. I don't love to talk about the Lakers, but you got to give them their due.
Yeah. I mean, you could say, hey, look at their schedule. They've had some soft ones there with San Antonio, but they've beaten teams they're supposed to be. I mean, it's funny, Brian, I watched, you watched the Friday night game against Milwaukee, and probably one of the better regular season games that we've seen in a long time. And both teams towards the end everyone's grabbing at their shorts because they are dead tired here. And
LeBron, I don't know if I've ever seen LeBron that tired, and I've seen LeBron tired a lot.
Well, and that was the thing I said to myself after they won. All right, what is the carryover effect going to be? They didn't play. Milwaukee had to go to Charlotte the next night, and basically, there was no Holiday, Middleton, or Giannis in that game. And I'm thinking, all right,
they still Lakers won.
And still won, yeah. And Lakers are in, they got to play the Wizards on Sunday. So, what's the carryover effect going to be? Is there going to be not really a hangover, but from a fatigue standpoint?
Yeah.
And, how Anthony played, Sunday night, there wasn't. And you're right. I mean, in that Milwaukee game, I think he attempted 1-3 until, 3 minutes left in the fourth, where he hit, two back-to-back here. And I'm working on this document for, I think, December 15th, 16th, where we take front office questions, what teams have to ask themselves. And we kind of separate players with trade value, who has the value controllable contracts. And originally, like, I had AD in my, you know, player was with trade value, and I've taken him off that because I'm putting him in that basically off the board category, right? Like, you know, LeBron because of the extension. But there are players there like Jason Tatum that are, we consider them kind of off the board, untouchable here. And I don't know if you know, if this team was sputtering and they're 4-18, then you're probably thinking, you know what, we might have to, you know, try to split that Davis contract up into something here. But man, they're playing as good as they've played. They've kind of just know their roles, right? Like, you know, you're two alphas. You've kind of figured out the Westbrook situation here, and then you're getting kind
that
of
was a huge getting him to accept that role, because yep. he's now become a plus player. I was thinking that he was so bad in the starting lineup and he wasn't going to accept that role. It looked like that for a really long time. I mean, he was, you know, doing whatever when he got sent to the bench, and him becoming a plus player, not just a zero. They got a little healthier for sure. And they've started to shoot the three-pointer like fine. Like, instead of being historically bad, you know, it's been fine. Some nights are better than others. Lonnie Walker has been better than I thought he would be. So we'll see. I mean, it's the next, they still have a really hard month, but, you know, definitely, you know, you win in Milwaukee and Washington. Washington's a playoff team starting the week here. So, I mean, you gotta say that Darvin Ham has done a good job of riding the ship, and AD has been enormous. And I know people are going to start talking about AD for MVP. That's going to be what, I mean, I'm sure tomorrow when I get the rundown for various shows, it's going to be AD MVP is going to be on the rundown. But, you know, he's playing the best basketball in the league right now. So, you know, you got to give him that. He was just player of the week. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins it again here tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, MVP, I mean, that's probably for another day and stuff. But what the one thing with the Lakers too, when we just mentioned about Westbrook here, I think what's happened is that it takes a little bit more pressure off the front office, where we've always talked about, all right, Westbrook and the 2-1s, right? Westbrook and, you know, what can that get you? Where now maybe it's not about Westbrook. Maybe it's about Patrick Beverley. Maybe it's about Kendrick Nunn. What can $18 million and maybe it's a protected one here. You know, it makes things a little bit more manageable as far as if they want to go out and become buyers here.
Thing I'll say about AD, I was never in favor of trading him. And look, if they had gotten to 4-18 and he was struggling, I would have had maybe a different opinion, but I've never been in favor of trading him. Just like last year when people were talking about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I was never in favor of trading them. And it's why, like right now, I say, as frustrating as it is for the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard, I'm not that they would trade him, but like they have to stick with him because ultimately the talent is so rare that you have to stick with it. And by the way, if AD goes back into the tank or if he sprains his ankle this week coming up and misses a month, it's the reason why you stay in it, because the talent level is such that you have to stay invested. You know, it's like, you know, if you believe in a stock, that, you know, a couple of bad
Brooklyn.
Quarters.
It's like, Brian, it's like Brooklyn with Durant. Yeah. I mean, the talent level between, you know, for players like Kevin Durant at that level, and it's such difference. I mean, I know we're getting off track a little bit, but you watch the Dallas New York game from Saturday afternoon is a great example of that. Like, Dallas has Luka, New York doesn't, right?
Right.
Like, when you have a player like that, that can elevate everyone else around you and still go out and give you 35 points. I mean, like, everybody is starving for one of those players on your roster.
Yeah. And that was the Knicks, by the way, as bad as they looked on Saturday, they came back and beat the Cavs in a good win tonight. But you know, you mentioned the Nets. The Nets are on this homestand. And, you know, they came in today's game, you know, won three games in a row. Like, all of a sudden it was like, well, wait a minute, you know, it can change your whole outlook. Now Celtics came in today and knocked them off that perch. But, you know, we're 1 week, you're always kind of 1 week away in the NBA from having your outlook changed. And so, you know, we'll see a week from now, and the Lakers are on the road for the rest of this week. we'll see where they are. We'll see where they are at the end. To me, I've said this before, but I'm circling January 1st. The Lakers have 13 road games this month. They've played two, and they're 2-0 in them. The home games they have in between road trips are really hard, and they're on the road for Christmas, and they get a really – I've never quite seen, Bobby, typically when you're on the road for Christmas, they let you come home right after you're on the road for Christmas. Lakers go on the road for Christmas and stay out for a week. Like, they're on the road for Christmas and New Year's. It's kind of rude. So we'll see where they are January 1st. If January 1st they're in position, okay. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. I wanted to talk tonight also about the Atlanta Hawks. Now, we had planned to talk about the Hawks before this news story came from The Athletic today about Trae Young and Nate McMillan, which we'll talk about in a second. But the reason I want to talk about the Hawks with you, Bobby, was because they're a team that we don't pay much attention to. They have star players, but they don't get the high profile. And they're doing fine. They're in fourth place in the East. But I was aware that there was some internal struggles that were going on there. And one of the things was, you know, Trae Young, they trade for DeJounte Murray in the offseason. And the concept is that he's going to now share the ball a little bit with Murray, that, you know, that Murray brings defense. Murray takes the pressure off because, you know, Trae Young was awesome last year. He made the All-NBA team super high usage rate. And so the idea was, let's take some stress off of him. They bring DeJounte Murray in, and for the first month, 6 weeks of the season, his usage rate was even higher than it was last year. He and Murray had some great games, but it wasn't the kind of flow that they were looking for. And they've won games. I mean, they've never like been in a bad way, and now they've got injuries. But I know that Nate McMillan, from what I was told, Nate McMillan was trying to get Trae to share the ball a little bit more. And they had, from what I was told, like there was a moment in a film session where they kind of got into it a little bit. But, you know, Bobby, film sessions are prone for that. I heard about it. I didn't do anything. I just sort of let it go. And then we have this report from The Athletic from Shams Charania and Sam Amick about how Friday Nate McMillan and Trae Young got into a disagreement over shoot-around participation, and then he didn't come to the game. And they ruled him out with a shoulder injury. They played the Nuggets. I think that was Friday night.
Yeah.
They played the Nuggets. They don't have John Collins. He had an ankle injury. They don't have DeAndre Hunter. I can't remember what his injury is, but they're both going to be out for a couple of weeks. I think is a hip injury. I don't know. Trae Young misses shoulder injury. They list him as out. Also Justin Holliday's in health and safety. They're missing four rotation players. They play the Nuggets, who have been on a pretty good run, and they play like one of their best games of the year. Now, Bogdan Bogdanovich came back from injury. He hadn't played all year. He didn't play well, but they play that through one of their best games of the year. The ball's moving around. AJ Griffin, who's there, they picked him in the first round last year. Adrian Griffin's son He's, by the way, looked pretty good. I'm sorry I'm filibustering here, Bobby. He has the best game he's had so far. DeJounte Murray has a great game. Like, their spirit is great. Everybody's happy. They get a big win over the Nuggets with nobody there. And so Nate McMillan comes out today and says the reason that Trae Young didn't play, wasn't there on Friday, was because of a miscommunication. So what do we make of the situation in Atlanta at this point? Again, they're in fourth place.
Yeah, I mean, if they were 10 and 14, I would think, like, you know, let's raise the red flag. But they're in fourth place. They're in top 10 in the league in offensive and defensive efficiency. They've gotten and you've got injuries right now to, as you said, Collins and Hunter. You've gotten great production out of AJ Griffin. I mean, I think he's made Bogdanović expendable if he's not already expendable there. As far as with the wing, I think the interesting thing with Trae, second in the league in shot attempts, right? And having a career year low in field goal percentage and 3-point percentage.
Yeah. He's having his worst shooting season of his career. And by the way, their 3-point shooting is terrible as a team. It's like bottom three in the league as a team. It's ask the Lakers. It's hard to compete when you can't hit threes. And so, yeah, I mean, well, this is goes back to what we just talked about, Anthony Davis. Like, you've got a guy this good, you know, his, you know, a 6-footer's value skill set is different than a big man. But in terms of, like, you know, it's harder to find a guy like Anthony Davis and his Trae Young. But still, we're talking about a guy who was All-NBA. There's a reason, you know, Trae Young feels emboldened because the team has functioned around him. And so he is going to push back and he is going to want to do things his way. But he's an incredibly valuable player. So there's no doubt that there's some stuff that's got to be worked out between the head coach and the star, Bobby. And the thing is that the last, you know, he had issues with the last coach at Lloyd Pierce. So, you know, if you're the Hawks, you're like, man, you know, they're so deep. They've, you know, one of the things that they have done so well to build this team is draft.
Yeah. Really good.
Really and good. AJ Griffin is another example of their draft. And so they've got a lot of depth. They are upwardly mobile. They can trade some pieces. It's, you know, I don't think it should be a super alarm, but it is something to be, I think, to be watchful of a team that has a chance to make some noise in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. I mean, their schedules have been a little bit soft. I think, you know, they've gotten Houston twice, which they lost to, New York twice, Detroit twice, or Chicago. I think they've got OKC is their next, and they come east up, you know, or northeast with New York and in Brooklyn here. It's funny, if you would have said to me that it was John Collins, it was the guy that, you know, didn't show up or didn't come, then I'd be like, yeah, I get it. You know, he's averaging a career low in field goal attempts, and he's like, he's basically been phased out of the offense here. But I mean, I'm not, as I said, I'm not ready to kind of sound the alarms here, but you know, Trae Young is a polarizing figure, right? Like, but as we talked about when we started the show, like, players like him will win you playoff series. Players like him will win you playoff games here. And, when you give a player a $209 million 5-year max contract, it comes with the expectations now of you becoming that leader, right? Like, I don't care that you're only in the fifth year, you know, year five, as far as being in this leader, like you are the guy now, right? Like, that comes with it.
Yeah. And he's not the easiest guy to play with. He can be a tough guy to play with. And we've heard that before. So, I do think internally they recognize that their record is okay, but their record for the schedule they played should be better. I think that they are a little bit worried about where they'll be in another month. It also depends on the health of these players. I mean, you know, you're missing a couple of starters. John Collins has been rumored to have been traded like 15 different times in the last
year. He's like the Brook Lopez when I had Brook in New Jersey in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I think we traded him about five times. And I think John Collins, he's like the guy, like whenever I'm rating my trade guide, I'm just going to start just John Collins every year, right? Makes it easy for me.
Right. I mean, like, I wonder how many teams John Collins has been linked to. It's at least a third of the league, if not more. But yeah, I do think that that's a situation that bears watching. Another situation that bears watching, I want to know from your perspective. We've talked a bit on the pod about the issues that the Warriors are facing with what to do with their roster. And to me, I think this is a really interesting case study, a real front office case study. So the Warriors, their home road split is kind of crazy. And you just can't believe that they're going to continue to be this team all year. They start this week. They've crawled into the top six, but they're still 2-10 on the road, 11-1 at home. And one of the reasons is because their bench has been so poor. We talked on the podcast last week about James Wiseman going to Santa Cruz and not really impressing in the G League. Bontemps brought up the idea. He said this before about, you know, whether they should consider trading him for a guy like Kelly Olynyk or something. So how do you, as a guy with so much front office experience, how do you judge and how do you evaluate what to do with that team, especially as you look over in the Eastern Conference and you see Boston and you see Milwaukee and those teams playing so well and know that that's your competition too, not just the teams in the West?
Yeah. I mean, the big question for me, and you know, that I've written for Golden State is like, are we comfortable selling low on James Wiseman if it helps us now, which is in the Steph Curry timeline, but maybe hurts us later in the future. Right. Like that's kind of the $1 million question. I think the big thing with Golden State, Brian, and you know, this, like, they don't make changes during the season. They don't make regular season changes. And of course, when you're rolling, you know, in between 2014 and 2019, you don't need to make changes during the regular season. Like you made the D'Angelo Russell, Andrew Wiggins trade, you know, in February of 2020, but you were basically headed toward the lottery. Like that was, you know, it was a basketball move, but it was a move basically for the next.
They were looking to trade Russell from the day they signed him, even though they denied it.
No, I totally agree with you there. But yeah, so they don't like to make, from a change standpoint, they don't make regular season deals here. And that's the big thing with Wiseman is like, he's probably your trade asset, right? Like when you look at, you know, Curry's off the board. You know, you're not going to do anything with Thompson and Green, I don't think. Jordan Poole's got the poison pill restriction, which is incredibly hard to trade. Andrew Wiggins can't be traded. And he's coming off that game for, I think, at 36 the other night against Houston.
He's having an incredible year shooting the three. He's like shooting 44 something. I don't have it in front of me. 40 yeah. some mid percent from three. He was 8 of 11, I think. 8 of 10, 8 of 11 on three that night.
Yeah. So it's like, it's kind of like a domino effect here. I mean, then you're basically kind of staring at your younger players and, you know, with Kuminga and Moody and Wiseman, DiVincenzo, who's on a, you know, he's got a player option for next year here. So basically like Wiseman, you know, based on where we are right now, would certainly signal to be the odd man out, right? Not part of the rotation. He's bouncing around Santa Cruz here. But as I said, like, if you figure like, you know, the upside to him is not there and we can go out and get one or two players that can help us win a championship now, that's the risk, right? Like that's the risk that you have to kind of weigh there. And I don't think you have to, I mean, I get it. Like you're always going to say like, well, we could have had LaMelo Ball. We could have had Tyrese Halliburton here. Like at the end of the day, like who cares? You know, like that's for us to debate. Like that's us, for us to talk about. I think if you're Bob Myers, your track record is your track record, right? Like, yeah, like everyone misses in the draft here. And if James Wiseman is, you know, it's a lesson for down the road. Like, what did you do what was the I mean, he basically evaluated him on 6 or 7 games, right? Like that was
Your and like individual workouts. Yeah, I compare him to Darko because he was like an individual workout demon.
Yeah, he was Brian. He was down here in Miami playing pickup with all these guys. You know, John Wall was part of that group, and you know, you were able to kind of get a backdoor view of kind of where he was, and there was, hey, like there was appeal. Like you could see why the potential was there.
Not only that, wasn't there a rule at the time that the players could only do so many certain workout numbers of workouts because of COVID? That's one of the things we looked back at the 2020 draft at our pod that came out last Friday. And Friday through today, I heard from a handful of teams because, you know, the lottery is a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
Of course, Bontemps slayed a couple teams, and then like he slayed Killian Hayes, and Killian Hayes went out that night and like had like Thursday night after we recorded the pod, and like Detroit, I don't remember who they beat, but Killian Hayes,
Dallas.
Dallas.
Yeah. I think he had 14 in overtime.
He's hitting like dagger jumpers, and like McMahon is texting Bontemps, you know, Killian Hayes got something to say to you. Well, the pod wasn't even out yet. You know, Killian Hayes got something to say to you. But I heard from a number of teams that, you know, I don't think they were a little annoyed in our evaluation. And they just said, you know, the 2020 draft, like you just got to understand the COVID year, like the evaluation cycle was messed up. And, you know, I was talking to one team that, you know, drafted in the lottery and, you know, they didn't hit the out of the ball of the park. And they were like, yeah, we probably got it wrong, but you know, you got to understand, like we were so limited. And like, I remember like hearing that there were teams, you know, I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was some rule about how many workouts you could have, either teams could come in or, and like, there were like scandalous, like secret, secret workouts.
You basically had to, and you had to get tested to go to these workouts. I mean, I knew guys, friends of mine who would like, they'd be on their way to Memphis to go see someone work out, and they test positive for COVID, right? Yeah. And now you're like there was mass chaos with, and I think you look at like guys that, like Tyrese Maxey, right? Guys that got drafted in the 20s there.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys in the back half of the draft.
Desmond Bain, right? I mean, he was was he in that draft?
Yes,
you know, there were. Yeah. I mean, there were. I mean, everybody misses here. Like I mean, it's just part of it. The draft is part of it.
So the thing about Wiseman is that he makes a big salary as a number two pick in his third year. He's making over $10 million, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could get a $14-15 million guy back.
Yeah. Cost him a lot of money.
Might cost you another $100 million, but
is Kelly Olynyk worth another 60?
Hey, Kelly Oubre was back in 2020,
true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. And a first. Yeah, so it's a real, you know, I think the thing that you are worried about if you're the Warriors is you trade James Wiseman to Detroit or Utah or whatever, and a year from now he's averaging 18, 8, and, you know, a block and a half a game, and, you know, the guy you traded him for is your eighth man, you know. That's what you're worried about. And you know, they hedge this so well to get these lottery picks. I can see why they don't want to let go. I get it. I don't blame them.
Yeah. I mean, in the perfect world, what was supposed to happen here is that Wiseman, Kuminga, Moody were going to be your next wave, right? That was the next foundation. Yeah. Like you didn't have to go out and make trades or use your tax mid-level exception or some of these other things here, that they were going to be your reliable bench presence. And you know, when they went out after, I remember when Bob Myers talked after they lost to Memphis in the playing game, like he says, like, I need to go out and like fix the bench, I need veterans, like we need to, like, and he went out and did that. You know, I mean I wouldn't count Gary Payton as that. I mean, Gary Payton was waived right before training camp and then re-signed. He was basically waived because his contract was going to become guaranteed, but they did go out and got the, you know, the Otto Porters of the world here, and they thought that with, you know, that Moody and Kuminga and eventually Wiseman would be your, you know, those would be your next, you know, they're never going to be, you know, the next Curry or Thompson, but they're going to be an inexpensive fix for your bench.
Speaking of Curry, did you see this video that went viral here Sunday night of him making five full court shots in a row? Did you see that, Bobby?
I didn't see it. No.
Well, you will. It's him in an empty gym, and there's a ball rack next to him, and he throws five consecutive shots from like basically baseline to baseline, and he makes five in a row. And on the fifth one, he goes running out of the gym. Can't believe he made five in a row. And it is very believable looking video. It's fooled tens of thousands of people, not hundreds of thousands of people. By the time we do this pod, by tomorrow morning, it may have fooled millions of people. It's a very, very well done edit. And I guess I can't say for 1 billion percent, but the guy who posted the initial clip, although Steph has posted it now too, but the guy who posted the initial clip is the same guy who posted the clips back in the spring and summer about those Tom Brady. Remember those Tom Brady, with the, he was throwing the ball into the jugs gun or whatever. Yes. And there was like some Tom Brady thing where supposedly a drone caught him making a hole in one. It was the same guy who posted those. So and he's a video director and editor by trade. So, you know, just sorry to be the wet blanket reporter. But anyway, has nothing to do with the Warriors bench problem. But it was, I mean, if there's anybody you could believe could hit five straight full court shots, it would be Steph. But you know, they should have just stuck with two. If they stuck with two, you'd have been like, oh my God, he made two in a row. That you could see. But when they went to five, anyway. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Before we go, there's something going on in the league right now that almost nobody is talking about in the media. And it's so strange to me. You know, I'm 20 years into my NBA coverage career now. And so I have seen three major collective bargaining agreement deals and one that went into lockout. So that was fun for all of us. There's a CBA deadline to strike a deal in 10 days, 10 days from this pod comes out, December 15th. CJ McCollum and I were talking about it. He's like, yeah, everything's kind of going fine. You know, I wasn't expecting to give me a blow-by-blow update, president of the Players Union. And I've talked to some people on the league side, and they go, yeah, we don't anticipate any problems. And I'm like, there's always problems. There's always problems. So it's not like a huge issue if the both sides have until December 15th to let the other side know that they're going to opt out of the deal. And so it's kind of like a deadline. It doesn't mean that if they don't have a deal by December 15th that they're going to have a strike or a lockout. And it's not even for next year. It's for the year after next year, for the 2024-25 season. But it's interesting, nothing is said. And then the reason I'm even bringing it up now, Bobby, is that this last week, this memo goes out to the executives detailing next year's scheduling. And it has an option in there to alter the schedule a little bit for the mid-season tournament, which clearly they are negotiating right now. And I would think that if they don't get an agreement by December 15th, a mid-year agreement now, they're not going to be able to schedule the mid. They can't come to an agreement in July and then schedule the mid-season tournament for February, for December. It doesn't work. So I just want to know your side of it, having been on the other side of it. Should we be talking about this? Is this something to be quote unquote worried about or paid attention to? Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think a couple of things there. I mean, I think from the scheduling standpoint, I mean, this is the time of year right now when teams are starting to send their schedules in for next year, as far as they're building availability dates. And I wouldn't be surprised if the league is basically telling them these dates are going to be, need to be held open here for that. I went back and looked at what happened in 2016, right? Like basically the current CBA that we're under is basically like an amendment to the path, to the pro. I mean, it's probably one of like, thank God. I mean, like, cause 2011 was a, I mean, like we could do another pod about 2011, like 2011, which was the lockout year was. And I remember, cause I remember talking with Andy Ellsberg from the Heat about this and we laugh. And like, basically the agreement came about. And then like, we had a call with the league. They told us what the rules were. Like, okay. And in about 3 hours, you guys can go out and sign guys. We're like, what just happened? You know? Cause it was in like right before Christmas time, but back in.
Well, not only that, they completely renovated the luxury tax system.
Oh, well,
we got a deal, standard operating procedure. They changed everything.
Well, everything, the hard cap. I mean, when we were a team in New Jersey that was always under the salary cap. And then we go from the salary cap to becoming a luxury tax team the following summer. So then you're basically playing catch up, right? Cause you don't think like you were going to be in that position here. But I went back and looked at 2016, which is kind of, we're in the same situation. And what happened back then was, they moved the December 15th opt-out date to January 13th. And the agreement in principle was reached right around 15th, 16th of December. I remember I was in church when a team sent me the term sheets for that. And it basically in my car with a flashlight reading like the actual term sheets of the agreement here. So the reason why the it's pushed back to January 13th, although there is a principle in an agreement, is they have to ratify the deal from both sides standpoint. So I think when you look at it, they don't want to opt out and then kind of leave themselves exposed. So I wouldn't be surprised if, they push this back a little bit. And then within the next few weeks, we hear, you know, maybe next 10 days that there's some type of agreement in principle on the key terms and everything.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's been like this feeling, and some people have articulated this, that, oh man, especially with, you know, player empowerment and missed games and whatever, wait till the next CBA, the owners are going to go for blood. I mean, we don't have an agreement and I'm not sitting in on the meetings, but that isn't the vibe that I've gotten at all. I haven't gotten the vibe that there's blood at all. I mean, one of the things that the midseason tournament is going to be the headline grabber, but one of the big things that's going to be a discussion point is, are they going to lift the age limit and put the age limit back to 18? And there's been this long running back and forth there. You know, the give and take there is that the league, if they're going to admit 18-year-olds, the league wants to do way more extensive medical testing on players. You know, because, you know, the idea is that they won't have been able to watch them in the G League or at college. And so they'll have less information. And of course, what they really, the players union doesn't want players to sort of be maybe harmed by like somebody finding some, you know, gene that is, you know, or, you know, some predilection to, ACL tear, you know, he lands 13% heavier on his instep. And so therefore he's got a 9% chance more of tearing his ACL. And I'm making this all up, so red flag, you know, so there, that's what they've sort of been fighting over for years now. So that's going to kind of be interesting, but like, I'm not, and I don't know if you are either, I'm not getting any vibe of like gouging out the eyes here. So I do think there's a chance that there could be an agreement. I'm just not hearing much about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think what you'll probably see is certainly the aged limit will be is probably the central focus. And as you mentioned, the play-in, I think you'll see some tweaks to luxury tax. Maybe the brackets get expanded a little bit. I think one thing to keep an eye on is the extension rules are going to be possibly changed where, you know, you're not restricted as far as it's basically like the Zach LaVine rule, right? Where you're kind of, you know, they were kind of caught in that place where they can only extend them for 120% because he was on such a good team friendly deal. Similar to what Jaylen Brown is in Boston, yeah. Where maybe you can extend him for 30% of the cap for that season. You know, of the first year of that, that would, you know, there's no harm there. I mean, the goal is to, you know, player retention as far as staying with teams. And I think you'll see more tweaks in that realm. But I don't think it's probably going to be another amendment to kind of what these current rules are right now.
I'm already bracing for the hot takes. Cause it, I mean, look, maybe they don't get it done, but they're clearly preparing for the midseason tournament to be there. And, you know, it'll probably be something like the G League is doing right now. Yeah. So in the G, so right now the G League teams are playing games and then it sets up the seeding for the G League showcase, which is in what, 2 weeks in Vegas?
Yeah, 19th. Yep.
3 weeks, I guess, 2.5 weeks. And then they play a tournament there and then they start kind of anew in the second half. That wouldn't be what happened in the NBA. I think the concept is, you'll play the games and they'll sort of count on the midseason tournament scoreboard and also the regular season scoreboard. And then it'll set the terms for the midseason tournament, which I don't know if it'll be played at a neutral site or it'll be played in these sites, but you won't know the games and there'll be a certain element of not knowing a certain portion of the schedule. And the idea is I've compared to Bobby, if you have a better comparison, you remember that the preseason NIT in college basketball used to kind of be a thing.
Yeah.
And it would culminate in like a Final Four at the Garden, right? Or did it always get just played at the Garden?
Always at the Garden. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, you know, and then, and teams when they would win it, they would hang a banner. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they hung it at Duke, but there were places they would hang a banner. And now you may say, well, then, why did it go away if it was so? Well, that's a good point, because ultimately teams felt that they could do their own thing at their own buildings and whatever. And so, but that's kind of what I kind of think it is. Like the preseason NIT counted, it counted in your standings or in your record and everything like that. And if you won it, you were excited and there was some measure of celebration and there was some recognition that you would hang a banner, but then your season would move on. And when you get to the end of the season, maybe you made the tournament, maybe you didn't, but hey, we did make the semifinals of the preseason NIT. And I just, so that's kind of what I'm comparing it to. And I just know that if it comes together, Bobby, that people are going to just mock it and they're going to say it's ridiculous. And I don't even know what the reaction from the players is. I guess that's one of the things that's probably being negotiated right now is what's incentivizing the players. But if it does get done in the next 2.5 weeks, that will be, I think, have the reaction central on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think from the player standpoint, like if it doesn't screw up, like how we basically are operating as is, and then there's a cash component to it, right? Like maybe you can make an extra $1 million if you win this or $2 million here. Then I'm thinking like, well, what all I'm doing is playing the same amount of games and
get more money,
and I'm getting more money to it. Right. So what is it to me, you know?
Right. And it might be something else for the league to sell in terms of a property.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Until you told me about them pushing it back until January, I remember that there was after the 2011 lockout, there was almost no drama in 2016. And we knew that for months there would be no drama. And here it's been almost less than that. It hasn't even been a discussion point. Like I've been in touch with people who are heavily involved in it. Yep. And I've had full conversations, and that, and these people are like, you know, going to meetings, you know, reading emails, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, obviously it's kept close to the vest because that they're sworn to secrecy, but you know, stuff gets out and it's never mentioned. And by the way, I don't even think to ask, and they don't think to bring it up. So I don't know. We'll see. I would say this, if there's a CBA that's agreed to, whether it's by December 15th or January 15th, should never be taken for granted. You know,
oh, I lived
peaceful. Yeah.
I lived through 99.
Oh, did you?
98, yeah. 99. Woo.
did you get your salary docked those years?
I did. In 2000, we had furlough Fridays.
Yeah. Yeah. Never fun. So, all right. Well, thanks, Bobby, for coming on. I appreciate it. Thank you, Jackson, for staying up. Jackson's pulling double duty. He's doing NFL stuff on Sundays and this podcast. So we appreciate it, Jackson. And we will talk to you guys later this week.